أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء وسيد المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا والشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب العصر والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء، وعجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنة دائمة على أعدائهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المبين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، وإذا قيل لهم تعالوا إلى ما أنزل الله وإلى الرسول قالوا حسبنا ما وجدنا عليه آباءنا أولو كان آباؤهم لا يعلمون شيئا ولا يهتدون. صدق الله العلي العظيم. My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, this evening as we've gathered again in this blessed month, in this beautiful month of Sha'ban, to remember the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, to remember Allah and the favors which Allah has bestowed upon us by sending such great personalities as the family of Muhammad alayhi wa alayhim wa salatu wa salam. Tonight we've gathered to remember the birth anniversary of the man whom we affectionately remember as Qamara Bani Hashim, the one who was the backbone of Aba Abdullah, the one who was the standard bearer, the alamdar of Aba Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam, and that is none other than Abul Fadl Abbas ibn Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhim wa salatu wa salam. And on this blessed occasion, I begin by extending my congratulations and felicitations to each and every one of you, to our grand ulama, the Maraji Taqlid, and the scholars of Islam, and to our 12th Imam, Imam Al-Hujjah. You know, as we know that this blessed month of Sha'ban, as we mentioned even yesterday, is a month full of rahmah, of mercy and blessings of God. It is a month which is full of the birth anniversaries of the great luminaries and the personalities of this faith that have preserved and protected the teachings of Allah. And so these events where we get a chance to gather together and to remember these personalities is in fact a remembrance of the deen of Allah, the religion of Allah. Because really, had it not been for Aba Abdullah alayhi salam, had it not been for his brother Abul Fadl Abbas alayhi salam, had it not been for Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, whose birth anniversary will be marked tomorrow night, we would not have the religion of Islam that we have today. It would have been a religion of Banu Umayyah. It would have been a religion which would have been corrupted, would have been adulterated, it would have been distorted, as with many of the other past religions that Allah sent to humanity that today we see around us have been full of corruptions and distortions. And so we have to thank Allah for giving us this opportunity to have such noble personalities to remember and to celebrate their birth as a way of remembering the blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This evening, as I begin, as we mentioned yesterday, I want to continue in the topic of paying lip service to the religion. But I want to first of all look at some of the stages of the life of Abul Fadl Abbas alayhi salam. Similar to what I did last night, when I talked and I looked at the very brief timeline of the life of Aba Abdullah alayhi salam, I want to spend the first few minutes of this evening's session to remember Abul Fadl Abbas and some of the aspects of his life. Now, when we look at the very first aspect, actually, is even before he is born. As we know that Imam Ali alayhi salam lost his beloved wife, Fatima al-Zahra alayhi salam, in the 11th year after the migration. And although we know that Imam Ali married many women after the death of Lady Zahra, peace be upon her, the mother of Abul Fadl Abbas, that is the woman known as Fatima from the tribe of Bani Kilab, who we all affectionately know as Ummul Banin, the one who was buried in Jannatul Baqi just near the entrance gate, he didn't marry her. That is, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, did not marry her until about 10 years after the death of Fatima al-Zahra alayha salam. And so within that time frame, obviously Imam Ali did not stay single. He had other wives in that period. But it wasn't until 10 years after the death of Lady Zahra that he finally marries Ummul Banin alayha salam. So that would make, for example, Imams Hassan and Hussein alayhim as-salam, because they were born around the year 3 and 4 of the Hijra, that would make them around 17-ish years old, 17, 16 years old. When the death of their mother happened, Imam Hassan was about 8 years old, Imam Hussein was about 7 years old. 10 years later, they're about 18 and 17 years old, Imam Hassan and Hussein, alayhi wasalam, respectively. And it is at that point that Imam Ali marries Umm al-Banin. Now, when we look at Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, because that's obviously whose birth anniversary we are marking tonight, I just wanted to begin by the marriage of Amir al-Mu'mineen to Umm al-Banin, alayhi salam. We know that Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, peace be upon him, was born on the 4th of Sha'ban in approximately the year 26 after the Hijrah. We know that in that early stage, Imam Ali, as we know, was killed in the year 40 after the Hijrah. So that first 14 years is when Abbas alayhi salam lived with his father, Imam Ali, and obviously his brothers, Hassan and Hussein alayhi salam, and obviously Lady Zainab and Umm Kulthum alayhi salam, the two sisters. Those initial years are from 26 to 36, so from birth to age 10, he was in Medina. And then after Imam Ali moved from Medina to Kufa to set up his Khilafat in the city of Kufa, obviously Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas, about 10 years old, he also moves with the family, obviously. From there, we know that he was a young child, only about 10 years old, but he was still active in the battles that Imam Ali alayhi salam had fought. As we know, he fought major battles against, obviously, the forces of Muawiyah. He fought against, in the war that was imposed upon him by the wife of the Prophet, that is, Ummul Mu'mineen Aisha, and some of the companions who were with her in that battle of Jamal. And for those remaining times that he was with his father living in the city of Kufa, obviously, he was by his side. And even when we look at some of the descriptions of Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam, they talk about the fact that his bravery on the battlefield was unparalleled. Sometimes people could not tell, is this Imam Ali or is this somebody else? Even though he was a young boy, a young man at that time, but yet he still had a very unique personality and a very unique character and a very unique way of carrying himself on the battlefield. And obviously, why would it be anything otherwise, other than that, because of the fact that Imam Ali was known for his military bravery. He was known for many things. Obviously, he's known for his connection to Allah, his spirituality, his care for the needy, his just governance. But he was also known as a very powerful man on the battlefield. And we've seen that right from the days of the Battle of Badr, fighting alongside the companions in the camp of Rasulullah against the polytheists. And that tradition of Imam Ali continued through the entire, you know, history of Islam and well into his imamat and khilafat. And so it should become as no surprise to us that Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas at a young age would develop the skills that his father was so very well known for in the Arabian Peninsula. Once his father is martyred in the Masjid of Kufa, as we know, in the month of Ramadan, and the family then move back to Medina, this is now the time of the period of the imamate of Imam Hassan ibn Ali alayhi wasalam until his martyrdom. And so this lasts from the age or from the year 40 of the Hijrah to about the year 50 after the Hijrah. So Hazrat Abbas at this time is about age 14 up until the age of 24. And, you know, obviously it would stand to reason, and history also shows us that he was steadfast behind his brother. Yes, it was his brother, but more importantly, his imam, the imam of his time. And so he always, obviously, would take a back seat because the imam, obviously, when he speaks, he is the authority. But he offered unconditional support, obviously, to Imam Hassan, alayhi salatu wasalam, in that era. At a point in about the year 44 after the Hijrah, according to historians, although there is not concrete evidence and information about a lot of his personal life or his family life, we can presume that around the age, or around the year 44 of the Hijrah, when Abbas was about 18 years of age, he gets married, and he marries a woman named Lubaba. Lubaba, the daughter of Abdullah ibn Abbas. Now, just to give you some information before I move on, that Ibn Abbas, or Abbas ibn Abdul Muttalib, as we know, is the uncle of the Prophet. Abdullah ibn Abbas, who is better known just by his title of Ibn Abbas, is a very famous companion of Rasulullah, very famous commentator of Quran, narrator of Hadith. Abdullah ibn Abbas, again, is the first cousin of Rasulullah. Lubaba is the daughter of Abdullah ibn Abbas. And Abu Fadl Abbas, alayhi salam, marries her. He's about 18 years of age at this point. And historians have a difference of opinion. First off, we don't see her age mentioned in the books of history. But we do have we have traditions that tell us, historians that mention, that they had two sons. One was Ubaydullah and the other one was Fadl. And that's maybe one of the reasons why he's called Abu al-Fadl, the father of Fadl. And his lineage actually continues from there. And so that was obviously a very momentous milestone in a stage of the life of Abu al-Fadl Abbas, marrying, having two children. And then the fifth stage of his life, which is unfortunately cut very short, is the time from the imamate of Imam Hussein alayhi salam until the martyrdom on the day of Ashura. And this goes from the year 50 of the Hijra to 61. So Abu al-Fadl Abbas is age 24 up until the age of about 34 years of age. And as we know, on the day of Ashura, 10th of Muharram in Karbala, Abu al-Fadl Abbas alayhi salam is killed, is massacred along with the rest of his family and the companions of his brother and his family of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim wassalatu wassalam. And we all know the level of bravery that Abu Abdullah showed on the day of Ashura, the power in the battlefield, the unwavering commitment to his brother Abu Abdullah, the fact that he stood by him through every single episode. He never wavered in his faith at all. He was always sincerely dedicated to his family. And not only out of family ties, as we mentioned even in our last majlis, but know that these are individuals who look past family ties, that this was a relationship of the imam, of the master to the servant, of the imam to the ma'mum, to the leader and the follower. And you know, Abu al-Fadl Abbas, alayhi salam, as we all know, he holds a very sensitive, a very special place in the heart of the believers. Abu al-Fadl Abbas, alayhi salam, obviously he can never outshadow his imam. He can never outshine the personality of Imam Hussein ibn Ali, alayhi salatu wassalam. But in and of himself, as an individual of the non-infallibles, the non-ma'asumeen, alayhi salam, he has a very unique status. Let me just give you three statements from three imams of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, who have spoken about the status of Abu al-Fadl Abbas, who have narrated his merits. So the first one we have a statement from is Imam Sajjad, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, who obviously was there in Karbala. And he's been quoted as saying about Abu al-Fadl Abbas, he says, "May Allah have mercy upon my uncle Al-Abbas. Surely," the Imam says, "surely he preferred his brother," meaning Imam Hussein, "to himself and did good to him. He sacrificed for his brother until his two hands were severed." Thus, the fourth Imam says, "Thus Allah granted him two wings in place of the hands he lost, with which he soars amongst the angels in paradise, just as Ja'far ibn Abu Talib, Ja'far al-Tayyar, does as well." The fourth Imam goes on to say, "Surely Abbas, in the sight of Allah, the Glorious and the High, has a station which all of the martyrs will envy on the day of resurrection." Subhanallah, this tradition narrated by Shaykh As-Saduq, may Allah raise his rank in his Al-Amali, shows us the rank of Abu al-Fadl Abbas in the words of Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam. But as I said, it's not limited to him. We have a statement from our sixth Imam as well, Imam Ja'far As-Sadiq, peace be upon him, in which the sixth Imam has a short but sweet saying. He says that, "Surely my uncle Al-Abbas ibn Ali possessed clear-sightedness, this basira, and he was steadfastly faithful." The sixth Imam goes on to say that Abbas fought with his brother Al-Hussein, and he did very well, and he left this world a shaheed, a martyr, or a witness to the greatness of Allah. So even Imam Ja'far As-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam has commented on the bravery and the greatness of his uncle Al-Abbas ibn Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. The last statement before I move on to the theme, which we continue on from our last majlis, comes to us from none other than our 12th Imam, Imam Al-Hujjah, Imam Al-Mahdi, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. And in this hadith, the Imam has been quoted as saying, well, actually not a hadith necessarily, it is a hadith, but it's also a part of ziyarat of An-Nahiya Al-Muqaddasa, the very beautiful ziyarah which has been attributed to Imam Al-Hujjah to greet the shuhada of Karbala. And in this ziyarah, the 12th Imam says, my salutations, my salams upon Abu al-Fadl Abbas, the son of the commander of the faithful. He preferred his brother to himself. He made use of the opportunities of the day to earn the rewards of tomorrow. SubhanAllah, just before I move on, just that line alone, brothers and sisters, should tell us volumes of the character of Abbas and what we should be trying to strive and emulate in our lives. The 12th Imam said he made use of the opportunities of the day to earn the rewards of tomorrow. You know, Imam Ali alayhi salam has a hadith, and I just mentioned this on the side before I go back to the words of the Imam, but Imam Ali alayhi salam has a hadith where he says, and I paraphrase it, he says that opportunities pass by like the passing of clouds. Therefore, make the most of them. You've seen how clouds, if you look up in the beautiful sunny daylight sky, when the blue sky is out and the clouds are passing by, you look up and you see a cloud and you look away for a few moments and you look back and the cloud is gone. Imam Ali says, alayhi salam, that opportunities, the times where you can do good, they pass just like those clouds. And so grab hold of them, take hold of the opportunity before you lose it. And Imam Al-Hujjah, Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, says about Abu al-Fadl Abbas, he made use of the opportunities of that day, of the day, to earn the rewards for tomorrow. Hopefully we can make the use of every day that we are alive for our future, brothers and sisters. And then the 12th Imam goes on to say that he sacrificed himself for his brother, protected him, rushed to fetch water, and his two hands were cut in the process. And then the 12th Imam says, may Allah curse his killers. May Allah send his la'na, his damnation upon the killers of Abbas, alayhi salatu wassalam. So as you can see in these three Imams, 4th, 6th, and 12th, they have nothing but love, praise, adoration, respect, humbleness for the person of Abu al-Fadl Abbas, alayhi salam. He was not masum in the definition that we have of the 14 infallibles of the Prophet, his daughter Lady Zahra, and the 12 Imams. But that doesn't mean that he's not a role model. That doesn't mean that he committed sins, na'udhu billah. We don't have a record of him doing that, of acting against the Imam of his time, disrespecting his father, or his mother, or his brothers. No, he was a man of very clear and beautiful character, a man that we can all learn from. Tonight, as I said, I want to continue where I left off yesterday. We opened up a hadith from Aba Abdullah, which he said really right when he got to Karbala, after he was moving through the desert from Mecca, from Medina to Mecca to Kufa, and he was stopped in Karbala. As we know that Hur with his army had prevented him from moving forward or going back. Imam Hussein alayhi salam mentioned a statement, and it's a part of a lengthy hadith. I just want to focus on the one topic of paying lip service to the religion, where Imam Hussein said, "Inna nasa abidu dunya," and I talked about this last night, that people are certainly the slaves of this world, of the transient world. The second line of the hadith said, "Wadinu la'ikun ala al-sinatihim." The religion is only a drool; it's saliva on the tip of their tongues. It's a plaything. It doesn't mean much. It's there. You just taste the religion. You find a flavor for the religion, but you don't consume it and imbibe it in its totality. I want to continue from that point on and look at the rest of the hadith. It's only about two or three short passages. And I want to use the next 20 minutes that I have to address the remainder part of this hadith to get you and I to appreciate the beauty of Islam. What Imam Hussein alayhi salam fought for, what Abul Fadl Abbas alayhi salam gave his two hands for, what the other shuhada sacrificed their lives for. To recognize Islam is more than just a series of actions that we perform. Going on in the hadith, Imam Hussein alayhi salam says the following. He says, يَحُوتُونَهُ مَا دَرَّتْ مَعَيَّشَهُمْ. He says what? He says that they, the people, the Muslims, and again I'm focusing on the Muslims tonight because although the hadith says anas, it could refer to the Jews, to the Christians, to the Muslims, to other people of other religions who are hypocritically following their teachings. But obviously my talk is with us as believers, so I limit it to that area and that scope of discussion. And Imam Hussein says that they turn to it, meaning they turn to religion, whenever their livelihood demands, ma'ayyashuhum, whenever their life demands it, they follow Islam. People pray because everybody is doing it. You're going to the masjid, the mosque, the Husseiniyah. You go for ziyarat. Everybody's praying, so you also have to pray. You don't want to look and stand out. People pray because everybody else is doing it sometimes. People fast because everybody else is doing it. People perform azadari because everybody else is doing it in a certain way. And all of these are obviously good actions to do in and of themselves. Praying is, as we know, an obligation. Fasting is an obligation. Commemorating the grief of the loss of Abu Abdullah and the other members of the family of the Prophet is a beautiful act which has its roots in the Quran, we can say, because it is to revere and to respect and to love and show veneration and love and adoration for Ali Muhammad alayhi wasalam. They are the sha'air of Allah, the symbols of God, and to remember them is as if we remember God. But the point comes when something goes wrong in life. You know, there are some people, when things go wrong, they become closer to God. Sometimes maybe we have experienced this or we've seen it around us. Things go bad and sometimes people become more attracted to God. Look at this COVID-19 time that we're living in today. Many people perhaps have never prayed as much as they have in this last year. You know, this is the 1 year anniversary we're going through right now. Some people have never prayed so much because they don't want to get COVID. They want life to go back to normal. They want this, they want that. And so they're constantly, constantly, constantly praying to God. Ya Allah, change our situation. For the vast majority of Muslims, I would say, or for a number of Muslims, if I don't want to really generalize and stereotype the entire ummah, but for many Muslims, religion is merely a tool, like a hammer or a screwdriver or a wrench. When you need it to get something done, you use it. When you're framing some photos on your wall, or you're putting up a painting, you'll go and grab a hammer, and you'll use it for those 5 minutes, and then when you're done, you'll put it away. For Muslims, for some of us, that is how Islam is. It's a tool to be used at times of need. And when times get better and times are, or when times are, you know, in our favor, we maybe forget God. We forget the religion. And for many people, unfortunately, as long as religion does not interfere with their personal pleasures or their material goals, they accept it. That when somebody says that's haram, and that's when things change. And I've heard this from people firsthand, where they say that, yes, I pray and I fast and I'm a Muslim, but when it comes to business, Islam on the side. Islam does not govern my personal career. So if I want to invest in dodgy investments, then Islam does not govern that aspect of my life. Islam on one side, money on the other side. Islam over here, career, all that over there. Don't mix the two together, some people have said. Unfortunately, this is a reality that we see, and you know, it's very evident in the world today. It's very evident on social media platforms when you see what people post. Unfortunately, you know, we have examples in our own world, in our own bubble that we live in, you'll have examples of men and women, young or old. They're religious, they, you know, so-called religious. They pray, they fast, they go on for Hajj, they do the ziyarah. They're maybe the first to come to the center, the last to leave. They're doing all of these things. But then some major event comes in their life, like let's say a marriage. And you know, when marriages come about, for some people in the community, you know, and I, again, and I've heard this, and I'm sure you've heard it before, and I've seen it firsthand. People will say, you know, this is such a memorable experience in our life. You only get married once. Let's live it up. We'll start with Quran, obviously. Maulana, you know, can you come and bless our wedding program with Quran? And the Sheikh or the Sayyid will come and read Quran. And then they'll have the beautiful Haditha Kisa, because it's, you know, you have to start a program with Haditha Kisa, right? And then they'll have Qasidas, glorifying Allah, loving the Prophet, respecting the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And then a point in the majlis, in the program, will come. Well, they will say, Sheikh, thank you for coming. Here's your takeout dinner. We'll see you later. And you ask, well, what's happening? What do you mean, see you later? The program is still going on, you know. There's still food being served, and we're still waiting for the dessert and the cake and this and that. And they'll say, no, it's time you go home now. Which is usually a cue that the music is about to play, where the haram will begin to happen, where unfortunately, as we have been told by people who have attended such programs, that the alcohol begins to flow, because they have non-Muslim friends that are coming, and they want to be, you know, they want to show them that, hey, we're progressive Muslims. Yeah, we're Muslims from that part of the world, but we're progressive as well, you know. So the music starts, the dancing goes on, the alcohol is there, the free mixing of the genders. And then they'll say that we'll ask Allah for forgiveness. It'll be okay. It's one day a year. Come on. Lighten up a bit, right? It's unfortunately like those circumstances, those examples that we see all too often, that Islam is merely on the tip of the tongue. It's just a window dressing. People are just literally paying lip service to Islam. Whether it's people who engage in haram in their business, it's people who engage in haram in their life, it's those restaurant owners and store owners that are Muslims, and yet they sell haram, they sell alcohol shamelessly. They sell things which are impermissible, haram in Islam, shamelessly. Or you have these so-called organizations, halal loans, halal mortgages, halal credit cards, halal investment, things that they've labeled halal which don't even have a basis, halal debit cards. Yeah, maybe there are some aspects which can be made quote-unquote halal, but this isn't an animal you're slaughtering, bro. Right? There are certain aspects maybe where you can say, okay, we need to have a Islamic economic system which will cater to certain areas. But sometimes you look at what's being offered in the West, and they'll just use that word halal to describe anything, even things that aren't even haram. Halal water is being sold. What do you mean by halal water? What do you mean by a halal debit card? Right? So people are paying lip service to Islam in so many ways, unfortunately, that Imam Hussein alayhi salam had to pinpoint that as a problem of the ummah. And then obviously we have the example of those people who are orators in the community, who charge hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars for a lecture, or those poets who will say, who will come to recite Nawhas and Muharram, and some of their charges, and this is no exaggeration, but some of these Nawha reciters who will charge thousands of dollars for one night of reciting poetry, more than what a scholar may receive for an entire 10 nights of Muharram. They will demand, and they'll get it in cash, to come and recite for one night in the month of Muharram. Now, it's true that the Ahlul Bayt gave those who recited poetry in the name of Aba Abdullah and who taught others fistfuls of gifts. But this was a gift. It wasn't a wage. It wasn't a demand from the individual. And so we need to recognize, brothers and sisters, that many people are paying lip service to Islam at different levels depending on their own position within the religion. At a higher level than this, let me also say that our understanding of religion, of Islam, it must be such that if somebody were to stop us in the street or at work or at school or online and ask us as Muslims why we are Muslims, why do we do what we do, that we have to have an answer for them as well, brothers and sisters. You know, I can't count the number of times I've had people come to me and tell me that, can you talk to my friend? They want to convert to Islam, but I don't know how to convert them. I don't know what they need to say to come into Islam. Now, very basic things like this. Now, at one level, I respect if somebody were to say to me, can you speak to my friend? Can you speak to my potential spouse? Can you speak to somebody that may have a very deep questions about Islam and the Quran that I cannot answer because it's beyond my scope? I truly respect that because you're showing that it's something out of your league and you're not willing to, go and give an incorrect opinion about Islam. But at least we need to know the basics of this faith, brothers and sisters. If somebody were to come to you and say, I want to convert to Islam today, how do I do it? Is there a bath I have to take? Is there something special I have to eat or drink? Do I have to say something? How do I convert? I've studied Islam for the last 6 months, year, but I don't know how to convert now. What is the process? At least in the minimal, we should know our religion. We should know basics of the faith. And I don't doubt many of us know those basics. But there is still much more room for improvement that we can all aspire to attain. Again, I don't say that we need to be experts in aqaid or in history or in tafsir of Quran or any of these other subjects, but at least key issues, what is our stand on a particular topic, we should know. Again, you look at social media and so many times I see postings. People who are articulate in their own profession, and they'll put a comment, what is our opinion on X and Y stand? What does Islam say about X topic? What should be our opinion on this politician? And these aren't matters of taqlid. These are matters of intellect, of thinking. What is it that Islam is all about? And what are these issues that are coming up? Can you not draw a conclusion by understanding your own religion with what the issue is and bring them together in front of you and understand what the issue is? Sometimes people will say, well, I don't have time to study Islam. It's too complex. There's too much terminology. Too long majlis. Like this majlis tonight is too long and I'm going to end in 8 minutes, inshallah, exactly. But we have the power to learn foreign languages. We have the ability and the time to sit and watch an entire season of Netflix, whatever episode or whatever show we want to binge watch. And not only do we have time to watch, but we can regurgitate and tell people what happened in every episode and who did what and who did this and who did that. We have the ability to learn computer programming languages. We have the ability to learn how to develop apps and create software. So if we have all of this ability in the temporal world, can we not harness that same power, energy, love for the religion of Islam? I get it that it's not the fault of the believers all the time as well. It's the fault of the scholars at many different fronts because we don't have adequate content in English. We don't have adequate books, let's say, about tafsir of the Quran. It's a shame that in 2021, we do not have a complete, comprehensive, understandable commentary of the Holy Quran in English, in print, or in any format. Some are underway, but nothing is complete yet. It's a shame that we cannot say to non-Muslims or non-Shias that, here, you want to learn or understand the entire Quran? This is a complete contemporary commentary. We cannot say that. There's a lot of content that we lack in English in terms of books, in terms of audio content, podcasts, and so on and so forth, and video content. So it's also the fault of those who have the ability to deliver the content that they're not doing it. And there could be multiple reasons why that is happening. But religion cannot just be something that we play with when we need it, and then we discard it when we get busy with life. You know, unfortunately, this is what happened to the people of Kufa to an extent when they wrote those letters to Imam Hussein. Historians note that 120,000 letters came to Imam Hussein from the Muslims in and around Kufa. Not 120,000 people, 120,000 letters. Some were signed by maybe a family, maybe a community, maybe a village. And, you know, as Imam says, and I continue on in the review of this of his letter, of his khutbah, some people are good when times are good. But when times get tough, and for us today, believers in 2021, we think that it's difficult today with the COVID problem, with the political instability in the world today, things will only get tougher. Things will only get tougher, brothers and sisters. You know, you look at the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you look at the emissary he sent to Kufa to precede him, Muslim ibn Aqil alayhi salam, and look what happened to him. He scoured the whole city, people were there, but then when times got tough, they all left, and it was only Tawa, that one woman, who took Muslim and provided him that level of security. That speaks volumes for the situation. Let me conclude with the last part of the hadith where Imam Hussein says, alayhi salam, فَإِذَا مُحِسُوا بِالْبَلَىٰ قَلَّ دَيَّانُونَ. However, when the believers, when people are tested by misfortune, by tests, by tribulations, by stresses, he says, قَلَّ دَيَّانُونَ. The religious ones become very little, few and far between. We have to recognize, brothers and sisters, that our will, our resolve, our backbone will be tested. Don't we read this in the Quran? Every time somebody passes away, we say, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. But what comes before that verse? Verse 155, 156, 157 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Allah tells us that we will surely test you with something of khawf and jew, fear and hunger and naqs min amwali wal anfusi wa thamarat, and a loss in your wealth and your lives and the blessings of your life. وَبَشِّرِ السَّابِرِينَ. But give good tidings to those who have patience and steadfastness. So we will be tested. It's not when or if. We will be tested whenever that comes. Today, even if you're not suffering poverty, you're being tested with wealth. If you're not suffering with sickness, you're being tested with health. If you're not being tested with anything, you're being tested with its opposite right now as you breathe. And unfortunately, many Muslims in the world today, they operate at a religion, at a basis of their religion being a purely verbal religion. It's just lip service, as Imam Hussein had said on the day of on those days leading up to the day of Ashura. And so we have to recognize, brothers and sisters, that everybody's test is diverse and unique to that individual. For some, wealth is a test. For others, poverty. For some, it's health. Other times, it's sickness. For the scholars, the ulama, their tests can be what happens when they become famous and they become an overnight Instagram sensation or an overnight Twitter sensation or an overnight YouTube celeb. Other scholars, their test is being unknown except to their local jamaat, their local community. And they don't have millions of followers on Facebook. People don't tweet about them every second of the day. Their test is remaining unknown in society, but helping their local community, which is perhaps far better than being an international celeb, helping no one except for getting more likes on social media. So we have to recognize this fact. And as I conclude, on this night where we celebrate the birth of Abul Fadl Abbas alayhi salam, is that he definitely did not fit into the category of this hadith of his brother Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He wasn't in religion just as an instrument for his own material benefit. He was in it because he believed in the message of Islam. And you know, we say in English, put your money where your mouth is. So he put his life on the line on the day of Ashura, to the point where he wanted to go so many times to the battlefield. And Abu Abdullah kept pushing him back and saying, no, not right now. You don't have permission to fight. It shows that he was one who cared for this religion, brothers and sisters. Islam was not just a thing or the tip of the tongue. It was what Abdul Abbas alayhi salam lived, breathed. It ran through his veins because, again, he had not only the blood of Ali alayhi salam in his body, not only the teachings of Amir al-Mu'mineen, not only the love of Hassan and Hussein alayhi salam, not only the care of Lady Zainab and Umm Kulthum alayhi salam, but he truly imbibed this religion in his life. It was because he cared, not because of the family, it was because he cared about Islam, that he was who he was, that he was the man that he grew to be. You could look at other children of the prophets, other children of later imams, alayhim as-salam, and they weren't all as dedicated as Abul Fadl Abbas was. So this shows us he is a unique personality. As I showed you from the fourth imam, the sixth imam, and the 12th imam, they all regard this man, Abul Fadl Abbas, as a great individual, self-sacrificing, loving, devotee to the imam of his time. And as I conclude for tonight on this blessed birth anniversary, in this blessed month of Sha'ban, we ask Allah to accept this act of worship from all of us. We ask Allah to allow COVID-19 pandemic to finally conclude so that our lives can go back to not normal, but better than normal. So we can go to Karbala al-Mu'alla, that we can go to Abul Fadl Abbas's grave to pay our respects to our great Babul Hawa'ij, and ask Allah through the blessings of Abul Fadl Abbas to give us all that we need in this world and all that we need in the world to come. And what more do we need than to be on the path of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad until we leave this world? I conclude with, I ask all of us to remember those in our community who are sick. We have many members of our local Jamaat who are in hospital, in nursing care homes, in long-term care facilities. Let's remember all of them tonight. They cannot be with us by our side to remember this wiladat. They're in a room somewhere. Let's remember them, that Allah gives them a speedy shafa'at, a speedy cure, that they can be reunited with their sons and their daughters and the community. We ask Allah to give all of those who are suffering anywhere in the world a cure from whatever ails them. We ask Allah to forgive the marhumin from our family, our community, our friends, the ulama, the shuhada. Join me as I recite the Surah Al-Fatiha for the thawab of all of the marhumin. But before that, let us recite a salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين صدق الله العلي العظيم. Once again, إيدكم مبارك والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.